on the line with us right now, a fellow by the name of Travis Edward Pike, who is, as it says here, America's greatest living storyteller.
Oh, I don't know. I'm certainly one of them, though.
Have you just killed off all the others? Is that the way it works?
No, it's... See, if you accept it, I have been called that, but what I like is the idea of being one of America's greatest living storytellers. You say it that way, and you're one of however many you like,
mm-hmm.
right? And you're living, so you're not competing with Mark Twain.
Right.
And it's a nice, safe place to be, you know, one of America's greatest living storytellers.
It
could be a thousand of us.
How does one become a storyteller?
Well, it's one of those nasty accidents of nature, I think. I started out many, many years ago as a rock and roll singer. And
so you just eliminated the music, basically, is what you're saying.
Well, in a way, because I went from rock and roll into folk and then back again and all this kind of, and I wrote a lot of songs. And so when you're writing songs, you're writing lyrics. Of course, most of them rhyme. And, what happened is I started writing some really long songs, you know. I mean, if anybody's ever listened to however many verses there are now of John Henry, you'll get some idea of what I mean.
Now, you've done something called, what is it, Grumpus?
Oh, yes, Grumpus.
What is Grumpus?
Well, Grumpus is an original epic fantasy adventure performed entirely in rhyme, unless what you meant was, what is a Grumpus?
Okay, let's go there, too. What is a Grumpus?
A grumpus is not like a dragon, rather more like a large, surly cat with tremendous paws and gigantic claws and jaws that can crush armor flat. That's a grumpus.
That's a grumpus. We're talking with Travis Edward Pike, who is a storyteller, and by the way, you can check out his website, which is www.grumpus.com, which also leads to your own personal website. There are links to that, right?
Yes, there is a link. If you go to the link section, it will take you there. You can see the reviews. We've had some really great reviews. But we have to tell them when we say grumpus.com, mm-hmm. you got to spell it.
Grumpus.
That's right.
Two S's.
There you go.
Now, where do you perform this?
Well, in fact, I've only performed it publicly once. The entire piece.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at Blenheim Palace. I mean, if you're going to do it, let's do it right.
Right.
So Blenheim Palace, as you know, is the birthplace of Sir Winston Churchill.
Mm-hmm.
And currently the home of the 11th Duke of Marlborough. And I did it there as the world premiere performance for Save the Children.
Now, how did you get onto this benefit gala, this charity gala?
Through stupidity, of course. How else would you do it? No, really, what happened is I had written Grumpus. I didn't know what to do with it because nowadays, where do you go with an epic narrative rhyme? There's just not a whole lot of that happening out there. So we decided that we would try to make the show, and the best way we could make it would be as a storytelling event. And it was my intention, of course, to get an actor. Well, we didn't get an actor. Nobody wanted to spend the time to learn the thing. Anyway, no, it was my first thought, since it's an epic narrative rhyme and it's about a knight, and after all, that's a tradition from the other side of the pond. And furthermore, because in a country where bardic storytelling was big, well, you've got all of your Celtic countries, which is to say Scotland and Wales and Ireland and all that sort of thing, but also England. I mean, Beowulf was over there too, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the tradition was strongest. That's where everything seemed to be. So that aimed me toward England. Now, that was good. England's big. There's lots of places you could go. But nobody knows who I am over there. So the question was, if we're going to go do this show, how do you get an audience if nobody's ever heard of you?
Right.
And the answer was, do it as a charity benefit. So I quite reasonably asked, having no idea where I was going with it, I said, all right, well, you're British, I was saying to my friend. I said, what charity do you recommend? And he said, Save the Children. He didn't tell me that the patron of Save the Children is the Queen. He didn't tell me that the president of Save the Children is Princess Anne. Those things slipped his mind. The first thing I had to do was get vetted by the palace. And once we got past that, we did it for Save the Children. crowd that we did. And we raised them 10,000 pounds on the night and a pledge of another 10,000 pounds. So that's not bad for an unknown Yank who pops over there to the other side of the pond and puts on a show in the middle of nowhere.
Not only an unknown Yank, but one who originally hails from Boston.
Yes, yes, where we chucked the tea into the harbor.
There you go.
Well, I guess we've made friends now.
I hope so. Storytelling allows you to use the theater of the mind, much in the same way in the early days of this medium, you had, for lack of a better term, old-time radio, which is something we play on the air here, and sadly is something that is not done today as much. NPR does a little bit, CBC here in Canada does a little bit, certainly the BBC does some, but it's not done to the extent that it used to be done. That's almost a lost art, don't you think?
Well, it is and it isn't, because I have Grumpus, the original audio theater production, which is exactly what you're talking about. It's done exactly like old-time radio, except, of course, we got even better sound effects, and we got, you know, stereo and all this kind of thing that we didn't have in the old days. And you're right when you talk about theater of the mind. I am fortunate enough to have grown up listening to that same old-time radio. When we talk about days of yesteryear, I know it was the Lone Ranger. I know that the Shadow Knows and all this kind of thing, and I used to love listening to the radio. And it does fire your imagination. You create those characters. Yes, you're guided. The sound effects and what people say all guide you, but the truth is your imagination is engaged from the moment the show starts till the moment it ends. And that's not true with motion pictures or with television.
What's it like as a performer in a storytelling sense to literally have an audience in the palm of your hand that way? I mean, they're sitting on the edge, listening to your every word. Most performers don't have that opportunity in more structured plays.
In a play, there's an imaginary fourth wall that everybody agrees that they can look through, and that's how they're eavesdropping, if you will, on the action on the stage. But in storytelling, you engage the audience directly. And one of the first things I notice is frequently if you say to somebody, oh, I'm going to tell you an epic narrative rhyme, the eyes glaze over and they flee as if from fire. You know, they don't want to know about it. But with Grumpus, as soon as you begin to tell the story, the eyes don't glaze over, they brighten. The mouths fall open and the smiles begin, and people will sit for the entire 90 minutes grinning. They're like children. And it's the best thing they remember. It's like when mommy used to read to them or something. I don't know what it is, but it is magical. And it's a wonderful, wonderful privilege to be able to be a storyteller.
Before we let you go, and I want to talk about how one can hear your work in long form, and we'll do that in a moment, but can we get another sample of something from Grumpus?
Oh, yeah, we ought to find out a little more about some of the characters and things. There's the king, and there's the dwarf, and there's the knight, and, of course, the Grumpus itself. So, let's play with the dwarf. All right. When Sir Ellery meets the dwarf, he doesn't really see him because it's dark, it's pitch black, and the clouds have moved in over the mountainside. So he doesn't know what this thing is. All he knows, he can't see it. It's scaring him. It scared his horse, and the thing eventually tells him, come this way, and he follows it through the darkness, where but moments before it had been pitch dark. Suddenly there appeared a cave and a blazing campfire. This was magic and much to be feared. And the light from the fire revealed the creature, a dwarf. The knight's heart skipped a beat, for dwarves dwelled underground and often were found to be creatures of guile and deceit. They were said to possess great quantities of jewels and huge amounts of gold, but unlike the elves, kept it all to themselves, or so the story was told. They were known to live long, were surprisingly strong, and were careless to hide their treasures. Neither force nor stealth threatened their wealth, safeguarded by magical measures. Now, a highwayman may be defeated in battle hand to hand, and a Grumpus, though wild and ferocious, still allowed for a man to stand and fight for his life, but a wizard was not a man to provoke, for the man who aroused the wizard's ire might be gone in a puff of smoke. And so it seemed it behooved the knight to seek to make amends, to be wary of unintended slight, to try at least to be friends. And then, of course, the dwarf has the things that he says, too. And basically, he convinces the knight, instead of going out and killing the grumpus for scourging the land, he should befriend it, and this is what he says.
It's true that this is a desolate place, but I prefer it this way. Here, I'm able to indulge myself and do just what I may. Still and all, though I'm a hermit, and self-proclaimed, I might add, I find some company soothing for fear of going mad. Lo, but certain the grumpus appears, as if in reply to my wish, and I feed it some rabbit or pheasant or squirrel or grouse, or best of all, fish. Now, what I'm wondering mainly is, why must you strike it dead when it's ever so easy to bid it come as a friend to court instead?
Well, in the course of that evening's conversation, the dwarf sort of wins Sir Ellery over to that point of view, so he disappears in a puff of smoke, and as Sir Ellery leaves that confrontation, it appeared that the dwarf indeed was a creature of awesome powers. As the uneasy knight led his steed away, his thoughts strayed to enchanted towers where he might yet, in fact, languish and die, should the sorcerer be provoked, or might he not perish in this waste, or even worse, be smoked? He'd really no thought of where one went when smoked one just disappeared, but he'd no desire to discover where or how. 'Twas much to be feared, worse still, for it could easily be he might not survive it at all. For until one was smoked, how could one know if the dangers were great or small?
Excellent. Travis, I thank you very, very much for talking with us this evening.
Well, I'm really thrilled to have been on the show. You mean it's over already for me?
Absolutely.
Can you have me back someday?
Certainly.
Okay.
Travis.
Thank you very much, Peter.
Thank you very much. Travis Edward Pike. Again, the website, www.grumpus.com. That's grumpus.com.